The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us this week is an old friend, a wonderful woman, Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat serving New York's 28th District on the east side of Manhattan. Welcome back, Senator Krueger.
Thank you so much, Alan.
So, with the coronavirus and with the governor making national headlines, being on CNN every day, there's this other thing called state government that's going on. Anything suffering?
Well, I think we're all suffering because there's so many new demands on us. You know, I'm here in New York City, where we're all basically told to be on lockdown, and yet we're still trying to get things done for the people of New York State. My heroic staff are in their homes, but taking calls and emails and responding to constituents 24/7. We're putting out daily updates by email. We get all kinds of feedback. We then feed that into the city government and state government so that we can try to make sure that we are prioritizing, we are triaging, and we are aware of new things that are going on as this pandemic continues and gets bigger and bigger. And let's admit it, there's an enormous amount of free-floating anxiety out there for all of your listeners, for everyone in the world at this time. And so sometimes people just need to hear, we're going to get past this. There are answers, not enough, not fast enough. Shame on President Trump for all those ridiculous lies he is telling the American people at a time of crisis. But that we are stronger than this, and we are going to get past it.
Well, Liz Krueger, otherwise known as Senator Liz Krueger, otherwise known as the Good Krueger, although that is a little bit of an obscure reference these days, I have a question for you. There are all kinds of people who, we knew the old politics, and as you know, the press has not been afraid to call people out. We know that the relationship between the governor of New York and the mayor of New York City has not been all that good. Do you see any changes in all of that?
I think the two governments are working together much more effectively than they have in the past, because I think everybody's had to put their ego on the side or redirect it so that they're focusing on what needs to get done. I mean, I don't know if the two men get along any better now, but their governments are working together, which is much more relevant. And I'm also going to only have good things to say about both of them, even if I don't agree with everything they're doing. This is such a hard and demanding job for the executives at the local and state levels. Again, because it's a pandemic crisis, but also because we have had almost no responsible leadership at the federal level. They wouldn't admit there was a crisis. They wouldn't even admit there was a disease. Then they didn't prepare for it. They had fired all their epidemiological scientists. I mean, thank goodness Anthony Fauci is still there. But whenever I see him on TV on the same stage as Trump, I know he wants to scream out loud. So I have no criticisms of the mayor or the governor at this time. They are showing up, trying to get the answers as fast as they can, pushing their governments beyond perhaps their actual capacities to accomplish what we need to.
Now, Liz Krueger, we have a Senate, we have an Assembly. Sometimes they're not always on the same page. For example, well, there are many examples. Without going to all of them, do you think that the crisis has made the leadership in both houses a little bit closer, or there's less need to have these kinds of differences?
Well, I actually think that when you talk about the leadership of the Senate and the Assembly, Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Carl Hastie, they've actually have been on very good terms. Can they agree on everything? No. Do you and your wife agree on everything? I bet not. I know my husband and I don't.
We don't agree on almost anything. But,
there you go.
Actually, we do. We agree with you 100% about the way Trump has been behaving and handling all of this.
So Carl and Andrea are focused on the serious things that the legislature has to get done for the state. We have to try to come to completion of an annual budget, hopefully by April 1st. We are hampered by our ability to be in the same rooms talking eye to eye, one on one. We're doing it all through, you know, conference calls and those conference calls where you can see each other, Skype and other formats. We have agreed that there are many, many policy issues that aren't going to get done either in this budget or out of this budget until the pandemic is done. We agree that we look at those numbers that come out, Tom DiNapoli, you know, being depressingly helpful in showing us how much our revenue projections are going down because people don't have jobs, people won't have tax money that they can pay us. Unemployment's going up, demands on the state go up every single day. So now we're talking about being billions and billions and billions of dollars in the hole that we had no idea about 3 weeks ago, literally, no idea about. So we are pushing and pulling to try to come up with the right answers in the context of less and less money. And I watch my phone alerts every minute to see when the federal government is going to pass legislation to increase funds to epicenters like ours here in New York, because that is the only way we're going to solve this problem. We can't tax ourselves out of it. We don't get to print money in the basement. The federal government gets to print money in the basement. They get to go into deficit in economic crisis times, and they need to do that and come up with the money that the states and localities are so desperate for right now.
Well, you know, you're the financial expert on the Senate side, the chair of the important committee. Are there some things that actually will do better? For example, if you pass marijuana reform and people are allowed to buy it, you can tax it. That would bring some money. It wouldn't change the billions of dollars that New York is in the hole, but it would make a powerful argument for doing it, wouldn't it?
Well, you know how much I would love to see that legislation get done, but we have to get it done right. And there are still discussions that need to be had that I just don't know that the governor and the legislature have the bandwidth to do before April 1st. And I'm not sure when we're coming back after April 1st. I will remind everyone, marijuana was not a pot of gold in a short-term sense. We were talking about building a new legal industry in New York State involving regulations, licenses, development of new models of business in small size, so that communities of color who suffered the most harm from marijuana ended up getting some of the rewards of a legal business model. So there was no immediate money from that to help with the pandemic anyway. So if that waits 6 months, I don't think that's either the end of the world or really reversing our course on trying to maximize money that we need now.
Liz Krueger, one of the things that is bugging me the most is that there are now localities that are talking about postponing elections. In my little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, they've already done it. They're saying, we'll turn off the town meeting, we'll do this, we'll do that. Doesn't that set up Donald Trump to do the same thing?
Well, I think Donald Trump basically has already set his plans to do the same thing long before we had a pandemic.
Right.
I'm hearing from local boards of election, from New York City boards of elections, they don't know if they can get the presidential primary done on the April calendar. Their staffs are not coming to work and are told not to come to work. They're sick. Everyone is terrified of going to a polling site to vote. The legislature is exploring how broadly we and the governor can expand mail-in voting i.e. absentee voting, by defining being in a pandemic as being sick, hence being having the right to vote absentee. But I empathize enormously with any small operation that's only set up to do something a couple of times a year, very often with huge numbers of volunteers or people who come to work twice a year for $200 a day, to anticipate being able to pull this off. So it's terrifying when you hear the words postpone an election, but it depends on who's suggesting it and for what reasons. I don't hear anyone talking about postponing next November's election.
Would you bet on that, that this president won't do that? My sense of it is if he sees himself losing, he will do it.
Yeah, I don't believe this president has any belief in the U.S. Constitution or any belief in anything but what's in it for me. So if he thinks he can pull it off, yes, I'm with you. He would try. I have more faith in the American people and the process of government. I don't know if people remember, but 9/11 was an election day. Literally, the election in New York City that day got blown up. And so it got canceled, obviously. But then we went right back and put it back within a very short period of time. You know, it depends on who you listen to, but this pandemic could take up to perhaps July to get control of. It will mess up perhaps a number of different primary schedules, but I absolutely believe there is no reason for people not to be talking about a normal November election cycle for the presidency.
So tell me how you vote in the legislature now. You don't want to go in the same room with everybody else. A couple of people have already got the virus. How do you work that out?
So when we were up there last week, what we did was the Assembly and the Senate handled it differently. But in the Senate, you could just see the clerk in the hallway and check in so that you were there without actually going to your chair in the chamber. And then if you didn't need to vote no on any of the bills, which is always your right, or you didn't wish to speak on any of the bills or debate them, which is your right, then you didn't need to go to the floor of the chamber at all. You were done by having checked in quote-unquote non-controversial bills, and we were ultimately going to define them all, even after debate, as non-controversial. You didn't have to be in your chair. The Assembly, which has an electronic mechanism for voting, but you have to hit the yes or no button on your desk, I guess the up or down button on your desk, brought in their members, I believe, in groups of 30. And so in the Assembly chamber, designed for 150 members, if you only have 30 at a time, everybody can keep fairly spread out beyond the 6-foot rule. So I believe that's how they handled their voting. That's what I was told by other members. We are exploring whether legally we can actually even vote through a audio and visual system so that if there are members who are in quarantine somewhere or who may be actually suffering and sick somewhere, that they would be able, we're exploring whether legally we can allow them to vote via distance transmission. Because, you know, yes, is it critical for us to get votes done? Of course. Is it also critical that we follow the same rules we are urging every New York to follow? Social separation, at least 6 feet between people. If you believe that you may be sick, and the vast majority of us have not been tested, so there's very, very high likelihood many of us who have not been tested actually are carriers, even if we are not symptomatic, that because of that, as many of us as possible should basically self-quarantine and avoid seeing any people. So we want all of these things at once, which are a little bit of a challenge. When you're saying you need to be in Albany to get this done, you need to not be in Albany so that you are not further infecting others. It's a little bit of a quandary, but we think there are legal ways for us to address this in the crisis.
I got a piece of mail this morning, Liz Krueger, from somebody who said, you've been encouraging and saying it's okay for people to go to their second homes out of New York City. Now we have the president and his group standing up there and saying everybody who leaves New York ought to be suspect and ought to be quarantined for 14 days, basically self-quarantined. New York all of a sudden gets a black eye.
I don't quite get it, but our president seems to like to target New York pretty much any time he can. Although, if anybody wants to point out, I deserve hits also. I took some direct hits at him on this radio show because he makes my blood boil. I have to tell you, he stands up and says, this is going to be over very soon. You'll go back to work in the next couple of weeks. They'll all be in church on Easter Sunday. I happen to be Jewish, but please, no one planned to go to church or synagogue or the mass anytime close to Easter Sunday. We are not going to be past this pandemic medical crisis. There is no way in hell we will be done. And almost every religious institution I know has closed their doors and said, if we can do it through streaming, great. If not, get on the phone and talk to us all the time. So please don't be getting out your Easter Sunday best and pressing your outfits unless you want to wear them at home.
You're our financial expert on things, state government budget. Last time we spoke, you know, you questioned whether there really was a $6 billion shortfall deficit, as I remember it. Now, isn't $6 billion, it's going to be a lot more because we have to pay for so much more. What do you think the real deficit is in New York State?
I think it's a moving target. It's true with the last time we were on. I was explaining that under a normal budget year process, the governor tends to overestimate his deficit so that he can be pleasantly surprised at the very end of the year analysis where he doesn't have as big a deficit, which is exactly what happened this year in that short moment between learning end of 2019 numbers and then learning what was about to hit us and then watching it all hitting us. So we've had an incredibly roller coaster-like experience in the last couple of months. I mean, even the day we had the revenue conference with expert economists who come in and project 2020 for us, at the end of 2019, they all had numbers showing a very promising 2020. And then they said, but of course, the last 3 days of the world have changed all that. We just didn't have time to project or even know what our real numbers would be, but they're going to be much more depressing than what we're telling you today. So it was sort of surreal the way they're making a presentation, they're giving you books of numbers, and then saying, yeah, probably none of this is true at the same time. I believe that Tom DiNapoli's projection was now 5 to 7 billion lower than originally expected on that day that we had that revenue conference. I believe that Governor Cuomo's budget director, Rob Mojica, has said because specifically of the lowered anticipation for tax revenue coming in, both because people are delaying the deadlines when they have to file, when they have to pay, and simply won't have the money to pay regardless. I believe they're projecting another $10 billion deficit just from that. I don't want to misspeak, so he can call it and correct me if I'm wrong. So you take that $10 billion, you add the $5 to $7 billion, Tom DiNapoli had, you're at 15 to 17 billion in the hole beyond where we all thought we were at the end of December when we were walking into probably a $4 billion deficit. So it's nice you called me a financial expert. No one else does. I happen to be the chair of a finance committee of the Senate. I certainly
hey, you're all we got.
As a friend, I may be all you got. But I certainly never walk around saying that I'm a financial expert. I try to listen and read as carefully as possible. But nonetheless, we are billions and billions and billions in the hole. Now, maybe the U.S. Senate and Congress will send us billions and billions of dollars ASAP. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, think about this for a second. As you have pointed out quite correctly, they can go down to the basement on the federal level and print all the money they want. New York State allegedly, and I say allegedly, has a constitutional responsibility to present a balanced budget. How do we get around that?
So we have a constitutional obligation. That's how our Constitution is written, and it doesn't give us a lot of outs. It does give us the flexibility to come to an April 1 budget and then to have it fall out of balance at any time after. So I do believe this is not a one-time process where we will make all the decisions relating to the budget before April 1, vote on something, and have the illusion that things won't need to be changed perhaps multiple times over the course of the year. There may be new federal funds with different rules that apply that we need to pass further budget-related legislation for. Things might get worse. We might need to come back and be told by the governor and the controller, here are the new numbers, we have to cut some more. There's not going to be any great news in these stories. It's going to be tough news and tough decisions, but that's how the legislative budgetary governor's process was designed to work, to allow for adjustments over the course of the year based on changing realities.
Liz Krueger, who gets hurt the most in something like this? I know that the governor has been counting on the counties and the cities to adjust their Medicaid expenditures and to take more of what the state was spending. But now we have the coronavirus. So I don't know how that's going to happen. He even instituted a group that was supposed to advise him. And they said, yeah, we have to do that. The localities have to assume it. But you got the pandemic. And I don't get how that's going to be any answer.
You're right that an expectation that the cities and counties can somehow bail themselves out without us and the feds or even take care of their daily functions is possible. It is not possible. The counties and the cities and our hospitals have the vast majority of the responsibility landing at their feet right now. This is not a time to be cutting funding to our hospitals or to our emergency responders. Happily, they are already sending money for health care through federal legislation, although it turns out they don't have medical supplies for us, which is more than a small problem. When you ask who does it hit, it hits the poorest hardest. It hits women who are disproportionately the poorest hardest. And in a pandemic that is targeting, it seems, the elderly and the immune-limited populations with other illnesses hardest, you know, I think they will be disproportionately the victims of the worst case stories. You know, if you are a low-income New Yorker and you are laid off from your job because the company's just not even open for business now, or laid off because they've projected what their sales are going to be from the rest of the year and say, I don't need you now, you can literally be down to the last dollar in your bank account within weeks. And no one thinks this is a storyline that only goes on for weeks. So we have enormous responsibilities, in my opinion, to make sure that we are there as government for the poorest people, the sickest people. We need to support, even though I don't have the answers yet, how we help small businesses get themselves back up and running after they are told that they can. It's, you know, even if the pandemic stops, let's say by July, and I have no medical knowledge, so I'm just using that date. That doesn't mean the economy is going to turn around that same time. This pandemic seems to be pushing much of the world into like a world depression. That triggers all kinds of things that we can't untrigger overnight, even if we're all feeling better. So we really have to think this through incredibly carefully and understand there are real long-term ramifications for us. But again, the federal government can print money. It can go into deeper deficit. I know there are people who are terrified of federal deficit numbers. We've brought them down before when they were much, much higher than they are now. This is not the time, in my opinion, to be worried about the numbers growing on a piece of paper that says federal deficit. And this is absolutely the time where you turn to your federal government and say, keep us alive, keep us functioning, set us up so that when the illness is over, we can jumpstart our economies, get businesses, small businesses reopened, get those people rehired, and let's hopefully keep everyone whole.
Okay, well, we've got 2 minutes. I want to ask a real question. Obviously, you can't cut Medicaid. They can say they can, but they can't for the poorest and the elderly. But we have this huge mammoth deficit. Where will the cuts come from, Liz Krueger?
So right now, we've been pretty much taking off the table anything new anyone was hoping to see. So if you're out there hoping we were doing something good and new for you next year, forget it. We are then prioritizing health and human services to not cut. We are struggling to figure out what it means from a cost perspective when you've closed everybody down for an extended period of time.
Liz, because we only have a minute, it seems to me one of the biggest things in the budget is education. And every year, everybody troops up to Albany and says, you got to give us more. Does education get cut?
I'm hoping that education does not see cuts, but I don't think it sees any significant growth in any way. We are also pushing as close to the edge as we can on when do we have to get the budget done. So we have a bunch of hypotheticals where I know, speaking for the Senate, we have no interest in, you know, pulling that lever saying okay to the most draconian cuts until we really understand how much we can count on the feds from right away.
Well, Liz Krueger, as always, we want to thank you for taking time out for doing this and for explaining things, because while you may not think you're a financial expert, as I say, you're the best we got. And the fact of the matter is you're sitting on the firing lines trying to figure out what to do. And we so appreciate your being with us. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you very much, Alan. I appreciate your having me on. Best wishes to everyone who's listening. Stay home, stay safe. We can get through this.